This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon. We continue our coverage of Katrina 1 year later with this special edition of our roundtable. Today we'll discuss what many say was at the center of the recovery efforts, race. Did race play a role in the aftermath of Katrina, and just how much did race play in the makeup of the Crescent City before the storm? How did it ultimately determine the fate of those in the hurricane's path? Joining us to discuss race and Katrina is Leonard Moore, a professor of African American history at Louisiana State University. He joins us today from Baton Rouge. Barbara Major is co-chair of the Bring New Orleans Back Fund, a civic commission appointed by Mayor Ray Nagin. She joins us today from Las Vegas. And New Orleans native Edward Haas, professor of history at Wright State University. He joins us from WDPR in Dayton, Ohio. I thank you all. Greatly appreciate it. Let me turn to you, Leonard Moore, first. We should also note that you are writing a book soon to be out, An Oreo in Chocolate City. You've been very harsh of your criticism of this mayor and all that surrounded this. How much do you believe race played a role in all of what America saw?
Well, I think race was the central factor. You're dealing with two pieces. Number one, you're dealing with Southerners, and then you're dealing with black Southerners, and number three, you're dealing with poor black Southerners. So you've got a triple whammy there. And I don't know, I guess part of my criticism with Nagin, some of it was before Katrina, where he didn't pay that much attention to the needs of black poor folks before Katrina, and it seemed as if he got more racially conscious after Katrina. But part of my issue is, just trying to understand Nagin wanting people to return home. And I live in Baton Rouge, so I'm not emotionally attached to the city. I think that gives me a unique perspective. I think we want everybody to come back. We want the New Orleans of old. But I just want to know, just from a, let's say, from an ethical standpoint, if all I have, Ed, is an $80,000 insurance check, if that's all I got, and you're telling me to come back home, but if I rebuild my house, but the other 49 on the block do not get rebuilt, then is that a worthwhile investment? You know, I think Nagin needs to be more upfront with people and say, well, if you're from this neighborhood, we're probably not going to rebuild there. So start thinking about Plan B and Plan C. And we can't be so concerned with making this a civil rights case about people returning when we really have to ask ourselves, is it in their economic best interest to return and rebuild their home?
Leonard Moore, let me ask you this. One of the questions that has been raised, and something that I raised all along, if we're going to finger point to Ray Nagin and others in terms of what was being done for black America prior to Katrina, there are a lot of African Americans who made an annual trek down to New Orleans,
right,
for the Essence Festival. We saw the poverty. We knew the problems there. And many would say, with a wink and a nod, we said, oh, that's old New Orleans, and moved on.
Right, right. I think the black middle class, I think we're very much complicit in that. But when Nagin ran in 2002, we have to remember that it was largely the white corporate community that put him in office with the small support of the black middle class. But it just seems to me between 2002 and 2005, bad relationships with black ministers. 2003, 2004, he goes with the business community and strikes down a minimum wage increase that was sorely needed for the black poor. So my argument is that if he would have paid more attention to the poor black folks before the storm, when the evacuation piece came, he wouldn't have been a foreign face to those black folks in the Ninth Ward. They would have had a certain trust in him where they may have gotten out. He came in there a day or two before and said, y'all need to leave. And they like, well, who is this guy? We haven't seen him.
All right, Barbara Major, we should note that we had Mayor Nagin on earlier. I'm not going to put you in place to defend the mayor, but let me put you in the place of the idea of talking about whether or not we saw enough connection between the black middle class of New Orleans and the poor middle class of New Orleans prior to Katrina.
I think, first of all, we need to get real and say whether or not there's a true black middle class in New Orleans or whether or not there's a true black middle class at all. I haven't seen anybody pay real attention, black or white mayors, Nagin and before Nagin, in terms of the African-American community. When I say pay attention, I don't care about you throwing parties for me. I'm talking about how have I fared economically? Did my quality of life improve? And that, in fact, did not happen. Race is at the core of what was New Orleans before, and it is at the core of the reconstruction of New Orleans as well. So the black middle class, in terms of paying attention, most folk that I know, maybe somebody would call me middle class. I'm talking about folk that work. There's no large black middle class in New Orleans. We were overwhelmingly poor in that city. And the other thing in terms of whether or not where we rebuild, I think it's still up for grabs. I find it very arrogant when people tell me where I live that I can't make a civil rights issue out of that. It is my civil rights. First of all, you cannot deal with reconstructing New Orleans without dealing with the history of how New Orleans was created, the way that it was created anyway. Those of us that lived in the Ninth Ward, I lived in the Ninth Ward and I lost everything. So for somebody else to come tell me whether or not I can come back, that is my choice. The other thing is, I'm in the Ninth Ward not solely because I just want to live in the Ninth Ward. It was a beautiful place to be. That was the only place that those of us who were first-generation college graduates who could afford to buy a house could buy a house. The other thing is, there is enough technology in this world, if there were the political will, to invest the kind of resources that we need to build New Orleans. And I'm not saying everything in the Ninth Ward has to be rebuilt. People usually focus on Lower Nine. Folk that don't know New Orleans have to understand the Ninth Ward is huge. I lived in what was called New Orleans East. I grew up in what was called Upper Nine. There's also Lower Nine. All of that was wiped out. And when you're talking about reconstructing the city, part of the problem is folk have not put the issue of equity on the table to deal with reconstruction. And I think the professor is absolutely right. Nagin did get in terms of white corporate New Orleans. And then he kind of ticked him off with the Chocolate City thing, and they backed away from him. My position is, I got a sense from where I sit that he had not paid attention, because he is not, I think, a politician. Because what I've seen of all the politicians, I don't care if it's the mayor of New Orleans or the mayor of Baton Rouge, I see him pay a lot of lip service, but I haven't seen anybody really invest and take the hard line to say, if it's going to be rebuilt, if it's going to be done, it's going to be done this way, that folk are going to have equity. And I'm not talking about equal. I'm talking about.
All right, I'm going to bring you back to that point in just a minute, because Mayor Nagin did suggest what he'd have to do and walk a fine line. But Professor House, let me go to you. I left you for last. We should note, as we talk about race, you are a white male who lived in New Orleans and taught in New Orleans. Now you are in Ohio, but you know the history. I'm curious, when you hear the discussion between Professor Moore and Ms. Major, can you understand the issue of black New Orleanians when really there is a separate world for many white New Orleanians? When we took a look at 60 Minutes this past week, and they talked about the debutante balls continuing when much of black America, let alone those in New Orleans, were so devastated by what went on, it was almost as if this world was untouched. Is it fair to say that to a great degree there are still very much separate and equal two worlds today?
I think there's a difference between white and black New Orleans, and I must confess that I think in many ways it's something that's evolved even more over the last 40 years. Interestingly enough, I too spent the first 3 years of my life in the Ninth Ward, actually on Desire Street. And then we moved to what we called Uptown, the Irish Channel, which I'm sure most people in Uptown New Orleans would not consider to be Uptown. So, you know, my background is really not in some ways very different from the other people. I also remember when I was younger that, you know, there was literally not a time when I grew up that we did not live within, I would say, a block to a block and a half of African-American families. And, you know, we spoke with them, we talked with them, we tried to treat each other with respect. I think in the 40 years since then, largely because of white flight, I think because of various other economic changes in New Orleans, I think that, you know, this has changed rather dramatically. I also think, too, that, you know, the economic development of New Orleans, particularly focusing on tourism, has not really been good for working class people of either mm-hmm. black or white.
And Professor,
race.
Give us a peek inside, if you will, personally, of conversations that you had with other whites during this time when you heard cries from black America about it being racist, that racism was the crux of the inability to get in and rescue these people.
Well, I really think that no one has really, in my mind, dealt with the logistics of the issue. And everyone talks about, you know, how quickly the response should have been. I've read several of the hurricane books. I've listened to many of the TV shows about it. I mean, I tend to the west, which is the major artery leading into New Orleans from Baton Rouge and Texas, was underwater. The I-10, I-610 junction was underwater. The twin span bridges looked like a children's erector set that had just been destroyed. And I think, you know, moving the amount of food and material that was necessary to help the people who were stuck in the Superdome.
So you feel it was more a logistical nightmare than it was race?
I think that has a lot to do with it. I think race is more significant from the standpoint of coping with Katrina after the hurricane.
How much would you buy that, the idea of what we saw initially, the first few days were just a logistical nightmare? It wouldn't have mattered if it were lily white folks on a roof or black tar folk on a roof.
No, I can't go with that. Me and my wife live about 40 miles up in Ascension Parish, and, you know, the highway was crowded. And I remember the day of the flooding, the day after the flooding, people telling me, I just drove back from New Orleans. Right. So there's this belief that there was no access. But I know the interstate between New Orleans and Baton Rouge was open. It wasn't flooded. And if you notice, none of the military officials said anything about the highways are flooded. They just didn't send the people. They just didn't call for the people. So, but
General Honoré gave a speech in Houston in the early part of this year when he pointed out that he was ordered on the Monday to go to New Orleans. He investigated ways of getting to New Orleans on the Tuesday, discovered that all of the airports were closed off. He eventually drove cross-country to Camp Shelby and helicoptered into New Orleans on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is a man who obviously is used to getting things done. I mean, I don't think it's accidental that the people who seemed to do, you know, the most good were the people who were using rotary powered.
Let me do this, Barbara Major, because this is a logistical nightmare that will be argued back and forth in time and memoriam. I can assure you of that. But what about today? We heard from some lower Ninth Ward residents who said to us, as Farai Tadeo went down and reported for us, that they felt as though after Katrina, and certainly now, that this is to a great degree, in a strange way, brought people together, rich and poor, black and white, because there is suffering across the board. Have you found that to be the case?
To a small degree. The suffering is not equal. And don't get me wrong, if you lived in Lakeview and you lost everything, then you're suffering. But it's very different if you had insurance. When I think of my family that lived in the Ninth Ward and in Lower Nine, many of whom who did not have insurance, not because they were trifling or neglectful, but simply because they couldn't afford insurance. And if you had paid for your house a long time ago, then you were not forced by your mortgage company to have insurance. So, no, I can't say that there's equity in the suffering. And it doesn't mean that folk don't hurt. But, no, some folk hurt a heck of a lot more.
Leonard Moore, let me take you to a soundbite that came from an interview I did earlier this week with Mayor Nagin when asked about specifically the book that you're putting together and the snipes, quite frankly, that he has taken from some corners of black America when many people have, as your title suggests, an Oreo in Chocolate City, the idea of maybe not looking after black interest as well as they should. Let me play that and then get your sense of what he said. Let's take a listen.
Really makes me mad is when black folk tear up black folk like that. You know, you would think that understanding and seeing all the images and understanding the challenge of dealing with something that no one else has had to do before, that we would come together and kind of recognize if this can happen in New Orleans, it can happen in Cleveland, it can happen in Detroit, it can happen in any other city where there's a concentration of poor people and particularly black people.
All right, Leonard Moore, there's what he had to say about that. And some will say that Ray Nagin has been very upfront and spoke to what a number of African-Americans were saying behind closed doors or around their kitchen tables. Others will say that here's a guy who was really kind of looking after the self-interest of New Orleans elite. So talk to me about what you just heard.
It just kills me to hear Nagin say, oh, we tearing black folk down. For 4 years of his administration, he ignored poor black folk. Those black politicians, a lot of state senators would tell you, man, Nagin wouldn't even return my phone calls. Ask black pastors in New Orleans what kind of relationship they had with Nagin. But also, I think his phone, on 60 Minutes, he was so proud of these Trump Towers that's coming in the city of New Orleans. And I've been criticized because I said the city would probably be in Las Vegas or the South. The Saints are playing the Falcons in a couple weeks, and we have let them turn that into a symbol of New Orleans, of the reconstruction of New Orleans, all right? The Superdome was one of the first things these white politicians did up here in Louisiana. They said, we're going to give $150 million to repair the Superdome, and they started repairing the New Orleans Arena, and we are letting them build playgrounds for the rich and saying that that is somehow a symbol of the rebirth of the city. We can't even afford tickets to the game.
Barbara Major, you are on a commission that is taking a look at all of the development and comeback on many fronts, including economically. There is an idea, as Nagin said in the interview with us earlier this week, that he has to walk a fine line. He's got to bring some of this money in, including outside money, Trump money, if you will, but he's trying to keep the African-American community happy. There's a delicate balance here.
It's a very delicate balance, and I don't know if you'll make that balance. The other thing is, when we start talking about relationships of ministers, I'm from New Orleans. I mean, I always have to question the relationship that all these folk have with the people themselves. I've been working in New Orleans all my life, and I've been working with the low-income community. My thing is, I could take pot shots at everybody there. Been there all my life, been poor and working class all of my life. The money, I'm going to tell you, I don't have a problem with some money, outside money coming in. I'm going to tell you why I don't have a problem. I got a problem if they want to suck up all the land and they want to suck up all the wealth. I don't have a problem with outside money coming in because the inside money has never even gotten to us. I think the professor is absolutely right. They're building a dome and we don't have decent schools. Most of these meetings that I went to, I see the same people, a lot of the same people sitting around who constructed this nightmare before with all the poverty and the injustice. I look at this whole picture of New Orleans reconstruction. One, it's going to take a long time. Two, my preference is that the mayor just step forward and say, look, if we're going to rebuild this city, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it. You don't come in, you don't get a contract, and you don't do anything unless you do it with the people from New Orleans. That
Professor
is not
Haas,
the way it's being done.
Let me do this as a closeout question for you as a historian. When we look at what is still fresh, clearly, in terms of the wounds, not only racially, but socially, economically, and the like, what do you believe has to happen first and foremost for this city to move forward based on history's tales of what has happened before?
I think it's difficult for me to say, you know, based on history. From my observation, though, I would argue that the things that have to be done are, one, fix the levees, two, rebuild the health system, three, improve the education system, four, develop housing, five, develop jobs.
All right. Well, that is the first start of a plan that many people say can be as simple if, in fact, the bureaucracy can be cut through. But as Barbara and Professor Leonard Moore have suggested, that might not be the easiest thing to do. Leonard Moore is a professor of African American history at LSU. Barbara Major, co-chair of the Bring New Orleans Back Fund, and New Orleans native Edward Haas, professor of history at Wright State University. I thank you all for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Quite welcome.